Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Pensacola, Florida, you're listening to Core Dialogues Radio, presented by ID Group, where thought-provoking conversation and thought leaders meet on air. Every Thursday at 4 p.m., we hit the airwaves with forward-thinking ideas, philosophies, and questions, connecting our listeners to ideas that will get you thinking. The answers are in our studio. Now, here's your host and whole systems branding expert, Dr. Mona.
Good morning, or good afternoon, I should say, everyone, and welcome to today's edition of Core Dialogues Radio. We're streaming from the Business Radio X studio here in beautiful downtown Pensacola, where I think it's finally cooling off, so we're happy to have that happen here. I'm your host, Mona Amadeo, and every Thursday at 4 Central, you can connect with us live online at coredialogues.businessradiox.com. And for those of you who can't do that, you can listen to us anytime by just going to coredialoguesradio.com, and there you'll find all the programs that we have done in the past archived, as well as ways to get in touch with some of the amazing guests that we've had over the last several weeks. So each week, what we do here is we connect with some people and their ideas that we hope will inspire you, challenge you, motivate you. And, you know, these people that we bring here to share ideas with you are people that have done things, and they're doing really good things in businesses and organizations. So they're not just people who are talking the talk, they're people who've done the walk. So there's a lot to learn from them. So over the last several weeks, our dialogues have focused on topics of engagement, of change, and I think those of you who were here last week will remember Dave Schrader, who shared his insights into his approach to leadership, which is something he calls leadership from the inside out. And while all of these things are important components of really creating great organizations, which is, of course, one of the reasons we're all here, there's really another side of this that our guest today is going to help us understand a little bit about. And, really amazing organizations are those ones who bake this concept, this idea of performance excellence into their culture. And that doesn't happen by accident. There's processes, there's systems, and there's ways to do this. And today our guest is Ted Kircher. And Ted is going to share his thoughts and ideas, his experiences about really how to build performance-based organizations where, like I said, this concept of continuous improvement is baked into the culture of the organization. So, Ted, welcome.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you here. So a little bit about Ted and why you should be listening to him. Ted has been involved in continuous improvement movement for over 20 years. He's worked with a number of organizations across the Southeast and in areas of strategic planning, employee engagement, and customer service. He's also been a featured speaker at a number of presentations at the Florida Sterling Conference, which we're going to talk a little bit about in just a moment, which is one of the premier quality conferences in the nation. Ted also served as president of the Florida Sterling Council and led Landrum Professional Employer Services in their successful journey to obtain the Governor Sterling Award, which is the highest quality award in the state of Florida. And I can tell you just from what I know about the Sterling and having explored it, never been a part of it, it is a very, very, I shouldn't say complex, but it's very detailed and it's very thorough. And if you're a person who has been recognized through the Governor Sterling Award, you've done something. So the fact that Ted has taken an organization through this, there's people like me who've read about it, and then there's people who've done it. And so Ted's here today because he's done it, and he's going to share some insights about that, as well as some other things. But Ted, let's start with this Governor Sterling Award. A lot of people, I don't think, really know it. They may have heard the Baldrige Award, but the Sterling Award is something specific to Florida, correct? And so a little bit about that, and most importantly, what the significance of someone winning that award would be.
Okay, sure. Yeah, actually, of course, as you said, a lot of folks know about the Malcolm Baldrige Award. That's the National Quality Award. It's built around seven sets of criteria all around. And I think the thing that appeals to me most about the Baldrige Award is that it's a systematic approach, a systemic approach to the issue in the organization. And it really applies to any organization. Mm-hmm. So the basis of the Sterling Award is the Baldrige Award. It's the exact same criteria over the years. The Sterling Council has adopted the Baldrige criteria. And now, in fact, many organizations are using these state awards as sort of a stepping stone toward Baldrige. So here in Florida, we've been very lucky to have a very successful quality organization for almost 25 years. Next year, they'll celebrate their 25th anniversary. It was established about during the governorship of Lawton Childs. Mm-hmm. He saw this movement as something that made sense, basically as a way to invest in the state of Florida by teaching these concepts and putting organizations through the rigor of these processes to improve the state. So he established the program in 92. There's always been this relationship between the executive office of the governor and the council. Mm-hmm. It's a public-private partnership. Really, there are very little of, I think this year, no state money involved in this. The money that's used to support the organization comes from both gifts to the organization as well as things like conferences, training, sure. the kinds of things that they do. So at the heart of it is the Malcolm Baldrige Award. That's probably the most important thing to take away from this is it's the exact same criteria as Baldrige. The idea for the Governor Sterling Award is that you're going to demonstrate through a 50-page application process that in each of these seven areas, and we can go through those in a minute, but in each of those seven areas that you can document and demonstrate that you are indeed addressing the fundamental questions around all those issues. Mm-hmm. It's not prescriptive at all. And in fact, for folks who are just beginning this process, it can be kind of confusing and daunting because you have to figure the answers out for yourself. Mm-hmm. And as you would expect, the answers are different for every organization.
Yeah, especially because it cuts across all kinds of organizations, right? Healthcare, government, small like service businesses. So it's not just one type of business. It's across all of them. And so it's got to be different.
That's
right?
What's so interesting about it is, I mean, literally, if you look at the award winners in the state of Florida in the past, I mean, it's large entities like Florida Hospital in the Orlando area, the Orange County School District, the entire district was a Governor Sterling Award winner. Elementary schools have been award winners. Lockheed Martin. It just runs the gamut. It can be.
So it sounds like, there is this, that you said there's like seven areas or seven criteria. Just quickly, tell me a little bit about that. And I guess then everybody creates some kind of plan to reach some kind of level of excellence, or how does it work?
Yeah. But the seven criteria, and the way I like to think about the criteria is it starts with leadership. Mm-hmm. Anyone who's been involved in any kind of quality movement recognizes that if the leadership of the organization is not involved, it's not going to be successful. You can have silos or pockets of excellence within an organization, but if leadership isn't involved, if leadership isn't committed to it, then it's not going to be successful. Yeah. So there are questions in the leadership category around succession planning, around how the organization understands and develops leaders, the way leaders communicate with the organization, governance of the organization. So it starts with leadership in my mind. Leadership then kind of impacts on strategy. So what kinds of strategic planning methods is your organization using? How are they communicated? Is this something the entire organization understands about what the direction is, what the values are for the organization? So leadership's got to play a key role in the strategic direction of the organization. Then it's all about customers. How much do you understand your customers? Do you segment your customers? Do you understand what the needs are as they vary across your different types of customers? Is your service model set up to deliver different values for different customer groups? Mm-hmm. How much do you understand your customers? And then, of course, what data do you have to support what you're doing with them?
Go ahead.
Category revolves around the workforce. So what's your training like for the workforce?
Them?
How you develop them? How do you select them? It's got to be people have got to be out there implementing what you're trying to do. Next is around operations and processes and how are you innovating in all these areas, including operations? How do you document what you're doing and that you've got the sustainability there from an organizational operational standpoint? Then sort of what undergirds all of that has got to be a knowledge system. Mm-hmm. How well do you capture knowledge that you've learned throughout the organization?
And how do you institutionalize it? Yeah.
How do you institutionalize it? How are you transferring that knowledge to others? Mm-hmm. And then finally, the last criteria is results. None of this matters. Right? None of this matters unless you're delivering results. Yeah. So the process is there are some very specific questions around in all seven of those areas. Mm-hmm. You as an organization may or may not choose to address every one of those questions, but your application process then is meant to reflect And again, it's about actually demonstrating that you're doing it. I've seen organizations and worked with some in the past who it's like, well, I think I'm just going to go out there and get me one of them quality awards here. Just let me write this 50 pages. I can do that in a heartbeat.
I can make this stuff
up,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah. That won't be a problem.
Yeah.
So it's about, and you'll find most organizations find that, I mean, it's a very strict limit on 50 pages. Mm-hmm. And when you get in this arena, limiting yourself to 50 pages is extremely difficult.
Especially that many areas.
Exactly right. So people get creative around, you know, graphically demonstrating the organization, lots of use of tables and, all that. So it is daunting. It is time consuming, and it is something that you have to, as you're working with organizations, realize that there is a tremendous amount of effort around demonstrating that you're actually doing what you're doing. So
one of the things that, as I'm listening to you, I'm tired, right? I mean, that's a lot of work. And discipline.
Right.
And focus, time, resources, et cetera. So take me a little bit through your experience with Landrum. I mean, obviously, you've been involved with Sterling a long time, and you participated in the work with Landrum. What's the real value? As you did this, what was the real value for Landrum and the people of Landrum of going through this process?
Well, we actually demonstrated financial results from going through it. We looked at, by taking this approach and looking at some serious issues the organization was dealing with, one of the issues at the time was workers' compensation experience. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we demonstrated a tremendous reduction in workers' compensation cost by applying this discipline to that particular problem. Mm-hmm. The other thing about it from a pure, and this will sort of lead into our cultural conversation mm-hmm. later, is the fact that when the examiners, so you write this 50-page application, you may or may not get a site visit depending on the quality of your application. If you get a site visit, then you have a team of examiners who come and spend a week at your organization.
Wow. And who are these people?
They are trained examiners.
Okay.
Sterling has an examination process that they run through. A lot of organizations will send their employees, if they're on this journey, they'll send some employees to become examiners as
a way
to build capacity within the organization. So they become sort of the internal consultants for the organization.
Yes.
Then these are basically volunteers from other organizations.
Wow.
Right.
Big investment.
It is a big investment. So they come on site, they spend a week. It's a very intensive process from an examination standpoint because mm-hmm. they're spending all day in the organization, going home, back to the hotel at night and working to ultimately write up their report on the organization. So part of what they're doing during that week is they're talking to all your employees.
Mm-hmm.
They literally, in our case, at Landrum, talk to every single employee that was involved. So when you start talking about, you know, your core purpose statement and what your core values are and what you said you did about employee engagement or about workforce development, then they're going to be asking your employees, tell me about that.
Yeah.
So for us at Landrum to see that our employees really did understand what the mission was, they really did understand what our core values were, and they mm-hmm. could say it in their own words what they meant to them. There was a great value in that.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, part of this is just about the discipline of it.
It's like writing a business plan, right?
Well, and executing and continuing to gather information about the success of your business plan. All those kinds of things had a tremendous benefit.
You know, one of the things we talked about as I led into this conversation, what we see in organizations, you know, as we work with our branding from the core process and we bring people together in these dialogue sessions, as we call them, with the intention of saying, you know, who are we? What makes us different? What makes us unique? What's the value proposition that we deliver to the customer? Equally important, what's our dreams and hopes for the future? And then, of course, part of that process for us is telling the story to the marketplace. But then there's this part of building that what we call performance culture. And, you know, the part of us telling the story is the part everybody loves, right? It's the sizzle. And guess what? Someone else gets to do it. And it's not the internal piece of this.
Right.
So I was talking to someone the other day about this. And they said, you know, it's sort of like having the personal trainer. You know, you got to lift the weights. You just can't, you know, you just can't say, I'm going to have this great body. Well, it's a similar thing with the performance within an organization. So did this help at Landrum coalesce people around the way they were going to act and behave and deliver value to the customer? Do you think that was a valuable part of this process?
It was. And let me talk a little bit about the sort of personal side of this. There's a professor on the West Coast, and I'll get my California schools mixed up if I... It's a professor, Jerry Jellison.
Okay.
And so with a name like Jerry Jellison, he, of course, has the J curve of change.
Of course he does.
And so he describes it as you're beginning in a change process, which obviously adopting this approach is very much a change for lots of organizations. So there's the plateau. Mm-hmm. And then you begin the bottom of that J, and you descend into what he calls the Valley of Despair.
I know it well.
Yes. And so somewhere down in the Valley of Despair, you may actually be not performing as well as you did as an organization before you began that change process.
Yes.
Then you work your way up and you're almost back to where you started. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you see the upper part.
And did you experience that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it was visible. Experiential.
In the beginning, as you're trying to teach the organization about these approaches and, of course, hopefully building the case for why we want to do this, mm-hmm. what you find, particularly from many managers and leaders in the organization, is I have real work to do.
Yes.
You know, why do I have to spend this time documenting processes and, learning mm-hmm. new skills? Mm-hmm. And they don't necessarily relate at the moment to what I'm doing right this moment. And mm-hmm. I've got real work to do going out there taking care of customers. Why do I do this? And so down there at the Valley of Despair, we had there was one manager in particular who voiced that quite often, that she had real work to do.
Yeah.
But once we got at the end of the process and we could demonstrate the successes that we've had by using this methodology, and we had the application process, she ultimately became, well, what's next?
Yeah, your biggest advocate,
right? What are we
going
to do now?
Yeah.
What's going to move us forward from here? So,
yeah, it's tough. It's tough in organizations because, again, first of all, there's such, I think, skepticism around these things. You know, it's the latest flavor. They've seen 50 kind of things and one more thing. And, oh, God, he went to a seminar last week. And so now we got to try something else.
Right.
You know, so that piece of that skepticism is huge. It's for real. And then even if you get people engaged in it, it's hard.
It's hard work.
It's hard because it requires kind of, the way I like to explain it, it's like you've been looking through one window and now you've got to come over here and look at another one. And it takes effort to, effort to get over there. What did you see? Let me ask one more question before I forget it. As you talked about, as people began to see, the benefits, or as they saw things working, I would think the metric and reporting piece of this had to be really huge in order to provide kind of continuous motivation of people, hey, it's working or it's not. And, a key piece that people don't always do in these processes.
Right. And that leads into the Landrum application was recognized for strategic planning as being one of the strengths of a best practice of the organization. And so what was instituted there in that regard was quarterly accountability meetings, where we were using Landrum was using a one-page strategic plan at the time. Mm-hmm. And so this one-page plan not only showed where the organization was going, but then individual departments adopted that same methodology for their, mm-hmm. their department planning. Mm-hmm. And one of the key pieces, I think, around an effort like this is having a regular method by which people can report back to their peers about their either a progress toward something, or, and just probably more importantly, what didn't work, what didn't go according mm-hmm. to plan, and what we learned from that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the best ways to communicate within the organization, because the metrics, the improvement plans around what the department was working on, the department itself had to mm-hmm. communicate among themselves about where they were going on those areas.
Yeah.
And then in turn report to their peers on a quarterly basis about where they were, had they achieved their goals. And mm-hmm. as I said, most importantly, what didn't work,
which people don't want to look at sometimes. Yeah.
Well, and that's where you have to have that culture of mm-hmm. it's okay.
Yes. Failure is okay. Right. Or stumbling. Let's don't call it failure.
Well, a lot of those metrics were stoplighted. So mm-hmm. you had red, green, and yellow.
Yeah.
And one of my mantras was red doesn't mean off with your head.
No.
You've got to be able to say, we didn't make it.
Yeah.
Here's what we learned about why we didn't make it. And then here's what we're going to do differently.
And and that brings in that whole continuous improvement piece, right?
Absolutely.
Because that's what I think is difficult in change initiatives is we think we can go in and fix it, when really what you're doing is introducing a process where it never really stops,
exactly.
Right? I mean, that's what it sounds like from Sterling, is that you're putting structures and systems and feedback loops in place so that people are constantly kind of learning.
Right.
You have this learning culture happening.
Right.
Is that something that, how do I say this? Did that stay alive and well in the organization? For the most part,
that's one of the
culture piece of it.
Right. One of the things that Sterling added to this, to their award process, was basically a sustainer kind of award. Mm. You were not eligible to apply for a certain period of time after you won the award. But now we've had some organizations that have got this sustaining award, which meant that they put themselves back through the criteria again.
Yeah.
And you find among the true believers in this, that I know of some organizations in Florida that they just do this every year. They actually go through.
It's part of their process.
It's just part of their process.
Yeah,
they write an application every year just to make sure that they're addressing these things. And because it is so comprehensive, in my view, then it does make sense that you spend the energy that it takes to address all those topics on a regular basis, just to see that you're moving forward.
What did you see, as you, other than skepticism, which I'm sure was your first response, people's first response to this, were there other challenges? First of all, how long did it take from, this journey?
It was about a 3-year journey at Landrum. We chose, there are various levels by which you can enter the process. Yeah. The entry level really is a navigator process, where you're actually having your employees complete a survey instrument that says where they think the organization is
more of an internal snapshot.
Right. And then you get some feedback from that.
Yeah.
Then the next step up is really one where you complete a shorter application, a 25-page application. Mm-hmm. It goes to a team of examiners. The examiners come and do a similar process. They spend a week with the organization. But the difference is, at the end, the examiner team reports back to the organization about, here's what we learned. Here what we see as best practices and role model kinds of experiences with the organization. But here's some opportunities for improvement, OFIs.
Okay.
Here are some OFIs for you. And they can be much more at that level. The team can, the challenge level, it's called. They can be much more helpful in trying to work with the organization. When you get to the Governor Sterling Award level, you don't get that. You get a feedback report, but the team is not as engaged in helping.
Yeah. Right. So does everyone go through all three of those levels, or can you enter it at any point?
Landrum chose to enter at the challenge phase.
Of course you did.
They didn't see the need to go through. And I think that was probably the wise decision.
Yeah.
It just depends on where the organization thinks they are.
So I want to switch gears just a little bit. We've been talking a lot about Sterling and your experience there. Broaden this out a little bit, Ted, as we kind of look at business today, organizations. It's not just business, right? It's organizations, for-profit, not-for-profit, schools, whatever. What do you think, from a standpoint of the challenges that are facing organizations today? We hear about the millennials. We hear about, engagement. We hear about retention. We hear about commitment to work. We hear about, there's just, those of us of my generation, right, they're just not as committed as they used to be. What's kind of your feeling of the state of organizations when it comes to kind of the levels of engagement and involvement? And is there, and that's probably a very broad question, but just generally speaking.
I think the biggest issue that I see with organizations, and just looking around, I think it's probably comes into two broad areas. One is in the whole issue of transparency. Mm-hmm. How much does the leadership of the organization encourage collaboration, and how open are they with issues about the organization, whether it's financial issues, performance issues, customer feedback, whatever the issue is? I think a lot of organizations, unfortunately, today are still making the mistake of not engaging their employees all across the spectrum.
Yeah, when you're talking about transparency, which scares people, right? It scares leaders,
right?
To be what you're saying, we're going to tell you about this, or we're going to. It's scary.
It is scary
from a leadership perspective.
It is scary, but I think for most everyone, having a better understanding of what the organization is facing, mm-hmm. gives them some more reason to be engaged and try to work to solve whatever the issues are, that and to be a partner, to be there to do that.
Yes, yeah.
And I don't think it matters whether you're a millennial or Gen X or wherever people. You are, or yeah. boomer or yeah. late boomer or whatever.
Boomer boomers.
That's what I think that appeals to most of
yeah.
us.
Yeah.
You know, be authentic with mm-hmm. me, be genuine with me, mm-hmm. share with me the challenges that we're facing, and I may have some ability to contribute to the solution of those challenges. So I think the lack of transparency, the reluctance of leaders to really engage the organization openly,
yeah.
I think is challenge number one. Challenge number two, which I think does connect with the millennial question, and that is a connection to something bigger. Mm. I don't know that most organizations think of exactly what are we doing and what does this do to either benefit my community or benefit the world or our country or whatever.
Something.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And try to help the organization understand that it's not just about making money.
Yeah.
We do other things. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another issue that I think if more leaders would grapple with that question and really begin to think about what that might be. Mm-hmm. I think, again, it feeds into the culture and employee engagement question. When I have a connectedness to something that's bigger than me, it's not just about the bottom line, literally the financial bottom line.
Yeah, and I think, you know, all the research shows that.
Yep.
Yet, it's interesting that the guest that we had last week, Dave Schrader, talks a lot about leaders. It's kind of leadership development from the inside out, meaning leaders being really in touch with themselves, what mm-hmm. they believe, what they're about, and why mm-hmm. they're trying to do whatever it is they're doing. And I think when you get kind of collective like that, and I've been fortunate to work with organizations who are very purpose driven. And to your point, you said earlier, it all starts with leadership.
Yep.
If those leaders aren't enough in touch with who they are and their purpose, it's hard to have organizations around that. It's just, and people are moving so quickly these days, it's hard to stop and think about why we are doing what we're doing.
Well, and I think too, it also contributes to the whole authenticity thing.
Yes.
I mean, if a leader spends the time grappling with that question and, yes. and can articulate what that is, mm-hmm. they're much more likely to be viewed by their people are collaborating with as being authentic.
Yes.
What unfortunately I think as in looking back over the decades as we went through,
yes.
you know, the development of core values and all mm-hmm. that, the worst mistake I saw organizations make during all those days is they throw some people in the room and they come up with these, you know, three or four,
they put it on the back of the business cards.
Back on the business card. And the organization knows the leaders don't live those values.
Exactly.
That's not who we are. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that does way more damage than any good that might come from corporate.
Yeah. In the world of working, as you know, I've worked with sustainability organizations, some, and they call that, you know, putting lipstick on a pig or
yeah.
painting a rotten fits green ain't going to make you green.
Exactly right.
So I think those are things. And I think that's really important because, you know, we talk about millennials a lot, Gen Xers around all of that. But if we really think about our generation, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. The 60s, we had a different route of getting here. But purpose was important.
No doubt.
And I think we lost our way, perhaps, along the way. But I think overall, you know, one of my favorite writers is a guy by the name of Paul Hawken. And he speaks to your point that really, the collective will of organizations is probably about the only thing that's going to get us out of a lot of the messes that we're in. Mm-hmm. So having leaders who are in touch, leaders who have thought about this and can coalesce the energies of people to do some really good things is probably our greatest hope that
Absolutely.
We have of solving, you know, some of the real issues
Absolutely.
Of society, because business is too fat and too slow. Individuals aren't powerful enough. So that's where organizations can come in and truly make make a huge, you know, huge, huge difference. I think we've all seen it, us all seen it work. Well, believe it or not, we're at the close here. That was a good way to close. We're on a positive note,
there
Ted. There's
Absolutely.
Hope. There is hope for
there's
us
hope
all.
Indeed.
So thank you. Thank you for your time and
Absolutely.
your energy. I appreciate you you being here with us today. So that does it for us today. Thank you for tuning in with us and being a part of Core Dialogues Radio. And our guest today, Ted Kircher, who shared his insights into the Sterling Award what that's about, the importance of having structures, systems, process, and continuous improvement organization. But most importantly, what he said at the end is that businesses with purpose probably can get there faster because the people who are part of those organizations want to contribute, they want to believe, and they want to be a part of something, again, bigger than themselves. So again, thanks for joining in. Next week, our guest will be Teresa Dos Santos, which is kind of an interesting connection. What Teresa does, she's a interior designer that works primarily in corporate America, corporations. And her whole perspective is the power of internal the visuals of the internal office, the way your office is organized, the colors, the graphics, so the interior design of the organization, but also the way everything is organized in order to maximize the efficiency and the connectedness within your organization. I'm going to speak personally from her. She came in and redid our office and restructured what we do, it has made a huge difference in the connectedness and the collaboration within our organization, and it's pretty too. So she did a great job. So we'll look forward to talking with Teresa next week here at Core Dialogues Radio. So again, thank you for joining us. We appreciate you being here, and please share this with your friends and your colleagues. And just so you know, we will have this show posted by Tuesday, along with other information on this whole idea of Sterling and how you can learn more about that. So thank you for joining us, and we will see you next week.